We're broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios.
Visit
mte.com.
Middle Tennessee Electric.
Serving to make life better.
Since 1936.
This is WGNS Action Line. Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers.
Since 1947.
This is WGNS Action Line. Now your host, Scott Walker.
You're tuned to WGNS, and this morning we'll be answering lawn and garden questions. Our phone number, if you'd like to text in a question, 615-893-1450. Again, 615-893-1450. We have in studio with us today Master Gardeners Beth Brinkley, Ran Powers, and Carol Wood. How are all of y'all doing this morning?
Good morning. Great.
Kind of cold out there.
A little too cold for the garden this morning.
Little chilly, yeah. It'd probably be, I don't know, is it hard to dig into the ground yet?
Ground isn't frozen yet. Sure. Yeah, you're still okay.
It's nice and wet, very moist.
We were talking about that, Al. This is actually a great time of year to do gardening. You can, for dividing plants, moving plants, you know, you just don't want to get out there and do it, but it's a great time. The plants are dormant. There's abundant moisture out there. You know, when it rains in November here, it doesn't dry out till like next June.
Yeah.
And, right. You know, you don't think about it, but you can get out there, depending on the plant, you can divide it and you can move them like furniture this time of year. They're dormant. And we typically don't think of it because everything is dormant, but the plants, they move easily, divide easily. And, you know, we think about doing it when they're actively growing, like in May or June, and that's the worst time
do
to do it. That you do that, you got a watering project. So this is actually, if you can, on a sunny day when it warms, when it gets up to 40, 45, or better, 50.
That's this weekend, I think.
The biggest thing is if it's too wet. If it is too wet, then you do need it. But when it dries out a little, warms up a little, winter, late fall, winter is a great time.
I've heard a lot about people using apps now so they can kind of arrange or pre-arrange their garden setting, and you can even, some of the apps, you can take a picture of your, you know, the back lot of your house or something, and it can show you exactly where your plants should be.
That's a good part of AI, isn't it?
It is, yes. It's one of those
cool
things.
It'll do the planning for you, and that's exactly what Rand was talking about. You know, just get on one of those and see where things should be moved to. You know, think ahead. This is a great time. I'm kind of old school. I was telling them, my husband came home with graph paper
yesterday. That's a good
idea. So we like to draw it out. But, an app is a great way to do that as well, to see where, you know, things you want to move them or you want to add to. You know, I have a big area that we had to remove some Leland cypress trees. So we have a big open area now. We're going to really get in there and think about what can we do differently, and maybe not all the same tree anymore. Maybe, you know, mix it up, do some natives, bring in all different types. So that's a good time of year to do that.
I know our first garden, what I did was I used graph paper too and laid it out. And it does make it a whole lot, I would say, neater.
Yes.
You know, you're able to put everything exactly where you want it and think ahead of, well, do I want to reach over this to get to this over here? You know, it's good.
Well, it's good to look back at, too, and remember what you planted.
That's right.
Because sometimes maybe you don't remember.
Yeah. Put it in a file folder.
Yes.
It's a good time for planning. Like I say, not only doing stuff, but for planning. Because we typically, or I'm guilty, you go and you get a bunch of plants, and then you get home and you go, okay, what do I do with them now? That's not, you know, the way you want to do it. And again, I'm guilty as anybody, but is to look at an area and go, okay, this area gets sun, it's shade, it's exposure, what kind of soil, is it competing with tree, all these different things, and go, okay, so what kind of plants then would do good and plant, and then go out and know what plants you want rather than just going and getting a bunch and go, where do I put it? But that's...
Same for landscaping. Take a picture, lay it out beforehand, and then decide and start digging or whatever you need to do.
We think we're going to try to maybe even get a greenhouse. This is exciting for us. So try to put that where you get, you know, that south side of sun mostly. So I want to make sure we don't plant a big tree right in front of the greenhouse or anything like that. So, yeah, just a good time to think ahead.
Now, again, our number 615-893-1450. Already have a question here asking about planting grapes. When is the time to do it? And what's the best kind of grape if I want to make some Tennessee wine? Mm. I guess you could have different varieties, couldn't you?
You can, sure. And I'm not sure, does anybody remember what the variety is in our vineyard?
Norton, is that what we have out there? We have a great vineyard out at the Ag Center.
I've seen it, yeah.
You know, some years that does, it does bumper crops. It's great. We did have one year that didn't do as well because of the rain cycle. But usually it's Norton grapes, I believe, are best here in Tennessee. But that would be a good thing to look at our website.
Yeah.
And because that's where all the trials take place and the we'll be able to report on what works, what doesn't in our area. And that's all on the Tennessee Master Gardener or the Tennessee UT Extension website.
I like it. The same person is asking, can I grow grapes on my pergola around my patio? And I guess they mean, what, have the grapevines kind of going up and around?
You could, I mean, anything that supports a vine, it might be a little hard to reach at some point. And you want to make sure you're pruning as well. Right. That's something we learned.
I think the pruning would be the one problem. Maybe I'm not sure you want your grapevines to be as tall as a pergola might be.
Are
they hard to grow?
I mean, again, it just kind of depends on the year and the soil and all that. But I have actually a neighbor that has a great little vineyard they started. You have to kind of baby those, you know, when they start out, they put little PVC pipes around the bottom of them. And then, you know, shoo away the birds when the grapes come out and make sure, you know, everything is cut back. It's a process for sure, and lots of trial and error.
So things like scarecrows, you know, whenever you have a little garden, you build a scarecrow to sit in the center of it. Do those really do any good? I mean, in the old days, they used to put little noisemakers of some kind on them. But do they help scare away the birds and other animals?
I'm not sure. I've tried the dollar pinwheels from the Dollar Tree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I won't say they don't work. And it's fairly breezy here, so there's always motion. But I think with anything like that, animals get used to whatever you've put up, whether it's, you know, plastic bags on wire or whatever it is. So they adapt. I mean, even the deer are adapting to plants they're not supposed to eat.
Yeah.
So your best probably defense is a fence.
Yes.
That's probably your best defense right there.
Now, here's a question we've never had before, and it's asking. It says, I just bought about 40 acres out in the country, and we plan to build a house on it. Is there, or do you know of, a company that puts windmills up? And I think what they're actually talking about are those big, you know, wind generating type.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. What do you call them? I mean, they're called windmills, I guess.
Yes.
But the giant, I know what they're talking about.
So more like they want to produce their own electricity and have it as an alternative source of,
I don't know who would call. I guess electric company would be a start.
Right, yeah. I bet Milton Tennessee Electric be able to point them somewhere. And also, you know, along with the wind, solar, a lot of people are putting solar panels on their roofs and things, especially if you're building a new house, that might be something to look into. Both of those forms of, you know, alternative energy is a good idea.
Solar's gotten cheaper. Over time, but I don't know, I guess you have to really figure out, do the math and figure out, is this going to save me anything or am I wanting to live off the, you figure out your, you know, what is your motive behind it?
Yes. I have a friend who has a neighbor behind them that's gone totally off the grid. He lives up on the top of sort of a hill, which is a ideal place to be for that sort of thing, for the sun and the wind. But yeah, he's achieving that.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to have a house on top of a hill where I can like overlook everything.
Yeah, the overlord.
Yeah.
Hello, little people.
Hard to find around here, though.
You're going to have to go west east.
That's right. Another question here. Let's see, how can homeowners tell if their plants are getting too much or too little water? whenever it is humid outside during the summertime?
Mm. Well, they'll tell you, won't they?
Well, that's, they will. Yeah, that kind of depends on the plant. You know, some plants are perfectly happy, you know, if the soil is wet. You know, I think of, well, you know, water plant, lobelia, the blue lobelias, cardinal flower, it's called, they're not widely known, but those plants are just fine, you know, they don't like it, right? And yep. Then some plants, they like, give me hot and dry, bring it on, you know, bring on this. So if a plant likes sun and it's in too much shade, then it's going to grow, you know, kind of gangly, kind of, it's like reaching for sun. You know, it will be kind of scraggly looking, where if a plant like shade and it's getting too much sun, then it's going to wilt down and you know, die perhaps, yeah. You know, if it's
it'll let you know right
yeah,
away.
So yeah, some plants
in shade, they love shade and they're full and lush, you know, in shade, and some aren't, so they're just,
yeah, so
many.
As you pick your plants, it's good to research, yeah. Isn't it? It's good to see where those
yeah,
need to
that's
be
right.
And
looking
and,
at the
yeah.
exposure and right. Is this plant, you know, because we really tend to overlook a lot of shade-loving plants.
I bet.
There are many wonderful, rather than planting your 28th hosta, my interest is native plants
yeah.
and gardening for wildlife, which is kind of two sides of the same coin, actually.
I like it.
You know, native plants, if you plant native plants, then you are gardening for wildlife. And
yes.
If you want to garden for wildlife, you need to plant native plants. But, yeah, there's plants that, you know, go for every situation, you know, like the forest floor,
yeah.
You know, plants that need their, you know, the canopy, and they get shade and they can compete with the tree roots in some cases, but it tends to stay moist, you know. But if you put one of those plants out, you know, much of Tennessee, it wasn't all forested, you know, there
yeah.
were grasslands. We call them meadows, savannas, glades, and, you know, those plants get a lot of sun, you
mm-hmm.
know, so those... So when you get plants, it's nice to know a little about, you know, what, you know, they're all native somewhere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so to replicate those conditions, you know, which is, takes a little study, it takes
yes.
a little education, you know, but it can, I've killed a lot of plants, you know.
Well, Rand's been great about reminding us too to, you know, as far as you're talking about the wildlife in the area, to leave the leaves, leave some things around, and especially this time of year, you know, what's left over from a lot of your flowers, some of those seed pods and things like that are great for wildlife. So just being intentional about, you don't have to clean up 100% your yard. It's actually better for our wildlife,
yeah,
not to.
Believe it or not, yeah, this is one situation where doing the lazy thing is the best thing for wildlife.
Very rare,
American
yeah.
trained gardeners, and so we typically want our yard to look like a carpet, okay?
Mm.
That is, I never realized how,
yeah.
you know, so many, like, where do, you know, lightning bugs, they
yeah.
decrease. Well, where do lightning bugs overwinter? Here, I'll put
I
you on
know.
The spot. What about like a black swallowtail butterfly? You know, you don't see
yeah.
many, but you've seen it like a black. Mm. Where do they spend the winter? They spend it in your yard.
Mm.
In there. They go dormant in different stages. Lightning bugs lay their eggs in leaf litter. Most of them are in like leaf litter, stems, organic debris in the first inch or so
yeah.
of the yard, or on stems of plants. Stems, they lay and they blend in. And so what do? We cut it all down. We bag
yeah.
it up, shred it. And, you know, lightning bug, their eggs are in leaf litter. That's where they overwinter. That's
huh.
where the black swallowtail overwinter. And many, many of our butterfly native insects, that they overwinter in your yard. They go dormant for the winter.
Okay.
Like native bee. I could talk for the whole time.
You almost wish you could put a sign in your yard like, this is intentional.
Yeah. Now,
so your neighbors don't go, what are they doing?
I understand, you know, yes, there's homeowner associations, neighbors,
oh,
and
HOAs,
people
yeah.
just freak out, you know,
yeah.
because and unfortunately, our wildlife suffer. If the bluebirds could talk,
yeah.
if the bumblebees could talk, oh, they would give us an earful about how our garden cleanup is destructive, you know, and we complain about
yeah.
no butterflies, no light. Well, where are they? You shredded them, bagged them up, and carted them off to the landfill.
Yeah,
and then the next summer, you go, where's all the you know, where's all the...
They need a seat at the HOA table when they have their annual meeting.
A very tiny seat.
Very tiny seat.
Just a little seat. Yeah.
And, you know, in your leaf litter, I used to blow all of my... I lived on a really wooded lot. I blew all my leaves in my beds, and you just leave them there.
That's a good idea.
And, you know, you really can't leave your total leaf mass on your yard because it will... destroy your grass.
That's true.
But you know,
try to just sweep it, get it in your beds.
Just get it in your beds and leave it.
Don't shred it up, cart it off, rake everything. Again, trying to make your yard a carpet. I know we love our grass. You know, grasses, the tall fescues are native to Europe. But Bermuda's native to Africa. They have no wildlife value. Now, I got a yard. You mow it. It's, you know, but the, you know, one of the sayings in Garden for Wildlife is, less lawn, more life. Mm. You know, good, the less lawn you have. And then and planting native plants, I could talk about.
But those leaves will break down, and they really enrich your soil. So it saves you buying mulch or organic matter to, you know, boost up your garden beds.
Very good point. And again, Master Gardeners in studio with us this morning. We have Beth Brinkley, Rand Powers, and Carol Wood. And just a reminder, tomorrow morning, starting at 8 o'clock, the Winter Spring Farmers Market is open at Lane Agri Park. Have y'all been to that this year?
Yes. Yeah, you've been there, Carol. Okay,
yeah. And we also have a garden basics class getting ready to start in February.
Oh, cool.
So if you would like some information on that, you can go to the UT Extension website for Rutherford County. There's a link there so that you can enroll in the class. It's four sessions starting on February 19th. And this is really going to be about how to manage the soil and rocks in Tennessee yards, how to propagate your plants, how to sow seeds, how to build a raised bed for your garden, to avoid that Tennessee soil. And then we'll be talking about the three R's, which is right plant, right place, right time.
I like it. We're going to take a short break. And again, we're talking about gardens and landscaping and all of that this morning with Master Gardeners. And if you have any questions, text those in right now at 615-893-1450. Again, 615-893-1450. Time right now is 8:40, and we'll be right back.
Broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios, MTE serves members with more than just electricity. Their community outreach team works with schools, parents, and students to provide engaging and unique learning experiences. MTE, serving to make life better since 1936.
Holden Hardware now has an e-commerce site. Go to doitbest.com/Holden-hardware and shop all the items in our warehouse. You can have them shipped directly to you, or most items can be shipped for free to Holden Hardware for pickup. Shop with us in person or go online to doitbest.com/Holden-hardware.
One more time.
doitbest.com/Holden-hardware.
This message brought to you by the Central Tennessee Regional Solid Waste Planning Board. Visit recycleright.tn.com for tips, ideas, and locations on where to recycle near you. That's recycleright.tn.com.
Recycle right, it's all on you. Don't be trashy, recycle.
Go to recycleright.tn.com.
Recycle Right Tennessee.
Local farmers, local meats, vegetables, and other produce at the Winter Spring Rutherford County Farmers Market.
Bundle up and make your way every Friday at Lane Agri Park.
Hi, this is Tina Fox at the Rutherford Farmers Co-op. If you're looking for that unique gift for Christmas, please come see us for all your holiday needs. We have a great selection of gift items for the young and old, and also for your feathered or furry friends. So come see us. The Rutherford Farmers Co-op. In our toy department, we have our Melissa and Doug toys, Ertl toys, Big Country, and Schleich animals. The Rutherford Farmers Co-op, 985 Middle Tennessee Boulevard, just off of South Church.
Hi, this is Amanda from Animal City, inviting you to come do business with our family while you're Christmas shopping. Santa is on his way to Animal City. Stop in for pet photos on the 13th and 14th of December. Check our Facebook page for more details and times. Stop in to Animal City with your pets to take some great photos with Santa. That's Saturday the 13th and Sunday the 14th of December. Check our Facebook page for more details and times. Animal City, 919 Northwest Broad Street in Murfreesboro.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Time right now, 8:42. We're talking lawns and gardens this morning, and feel free to text us any questions you have at 615-893-1450. One of the questions was asking about the Joro spider and if anybody has seen the Joro spider. And I looked online real quick. Looks like right now they're in the areas of Chattanooga, parts of Georgia, but I don't know that there's any actually in Middle Tennessee yet. And Carol, you mentioned, or no, Beth, you mentioned the website JoroWatch.org.
Yes, they want to know where you see them. They're trying to track them coming through. They're an invasive spider coming in, and it's they said not harmful, but you know, so you don't really have to. They're not going to be venomous or anything to humans. You don't really have to worry about them. They're going to spin their webs and do their thing. But for the most part, we're just trying to track and make sure there's nothing.
Can I say, just invasives in general, yeah. You know, there are so many, you know, in the plant world, invasive plants, invasive animal, there's just so many. And here's something I don't know, I keep in mind. I mean, it's a horrible problem in the plant world, the invasive plants here in Middle Tennessee.
Yeah.
Like our world-class walking trails, they're around. Well, there's nothing. Asian privet.
Oh, yeah, Bradford everywhere.
Pears, winter creeper, you know, just Japanese honeysuckle. And they provide no benefit to wildlife, you know.
Huh.
But here, we have corrupted things. We have brought them over here, and they've spread it.
Yeah.
In their native land, the Bradford pear is native to Southeast Asia. It's a wonderful, beneficial host plant for many butterflies and moths in Southeast Asia.
I didn't know that.
Butterflies and moths over there. They're just different types.
Yeah.
You know, the Asian privet. Again, privet, and they don't spread wildly out of control in their native land. Mm-hmm. But in North America, it's a horrible problem. You know, they have no wildlife benefit. Right. They spread. But just keep in mind, you know, these plants are wonderful wildlife plants where they came from. And unfortunately, you can't just bag them up and send them back. You know, but they're great plants in their native land. Same way for bird. You know, like the bird world, the English house sparrow, the European starling. Been an unmitigated disaster in so many ways. Hmm. Our cavity nesters have suffered so much. In their native land, in the UK, the European starlings actually declined, you know, if you can believe that.
Wow.
And there's over 100 million, and they're just, you know, it's a horrible problem here. But where they're from, they're good, beneficial, fit into that ecosystem there. And that's where, and I go back to native plants. And one of the big problems is, what is native? You know, and we could talk about that. But the native plants serve as the host plants for insects are really key. Insects are such a key. I never, you know, I just like the typical American, kill them all. Take no prisoner. That's
the bug man. Yeah.
That's what we are raised to be. I never realized it was a process.
Yeah.
To realize they are, insects are animals actually, and they are the base. They're the foundation of the food chain or food web.
Huh.
You know, insects decline, we can talk about why, it's kind of death by a thousand cuts, but you know, like Jenga, you start pulling out the foundation.
Yeah.
What happens to the higher order
starts
animals?
Tumbling.
They start tumbling down, and so that's what's happening here, and the native plants serve as host plant. The problem for, and I'm generalizing, for so many insects is making the baby insects. Making the insect, they lay eggs, and then they hatch, and they have to eat. Well, they can't eat just anything. Most of them are plant eaters, and over 90% of those are specialists. They need only certain plants, and these plants are our native plants, which have declined. Therefore, the insects are, like you see a butterfly, if they can get to adulthood, they can get the nectar and pollen from plants from your, crepe myrtles and butterfly bushes. And our host plants, our native plants, provide, beneficial insects. I know, we just want to eradicate them, pests, get rid of all it. They are just...
So folks know about the Joro. It's a giant yellow, silver, black spider that looks like the size of a hand, but it says their mouth is not powerful enough to break skin, but they eat stink bugs. But I don't see any reports of them yet in Middle Tennessee, but they're very close by. I mean, 99 miles away in Chattanooga? Yes. But they're big. And they come from Asia.
I'll take a few in my yard.
But see, that's what you're referring to, Rand, too. If you have more of these invasives coming, it takes away from the natives. I mean, you think
that's one
privet.
Less spider everywhere.
That's right. It's right. One less native spider that for
that
for
is interesting,
that
though, that it's an Asian.
Yeah.
And it, the stink bug, well, there are native stink bugs that are beneficial, but most of the ones we see are the ones that are
maybe they're getting
the invasives
ones, huh?
From Asia. It's an Asian.
Yeah.
I mean, like the honeybee. The honeybee is not a native. Everybody thinks we actually have. Now I could talk about that forever, but honeybees are like lifestyle. I mean, I like honey.
Okay. But we're seeing less of them.
Bees. Honeybees they're native to Europe. They range a little bit in the Middle East and North. They're not designed to pollinate North American plants. Again, send your hate mail to Bart here, but I like honeybee.
He's not even here to defend him.
He's not. Address it to Bart Walker.
I'm sorry, Scott.
No, I'd rather he get it than me.
Yeah, okay. But the honeybees are designed to fit into the ecosystem there in Europe. They were brought over by the settlers, and they are good. They're livestock. They're like, we like pigs for bacon, we like eggs for chicken, but the honeybees, we get honey from them. So they are good. But they extract resources. They're like livestock.
Here's another question. This one says, I need to replace a total of 5 plants that an app has identified as cherry laurels. New ones are very expensive. Should I replace them now or wait until spring? And this is from Carolyn in Murfreesboro.
Well, replacing them now is great. This is a great time to plant woody plants, wildflowers. The problem is people don't think about doing it, so there's no selection of it. That's the problem. I mail order a lot of things, and mail order for a shrub, you hate to do it. A little flower, it's actually not bad. You can mail order and get...
You might not have the selection you'll have in the spring.
Yeah,
that's well, right. And you might want to think about, instead of replacing all 5 of those with cherry laurels, with some other plant material. Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing, if one goes bad, like Leland cypress, usually they all go bad, and then you've got a whole place in your landscape that has to be removed.
Variety, right? Variety.
So variety is really what we want to aim for, and... so if you can find the plant material, we're really close to some of the best nurseries in the country in McMinnville. So they have the plant material if you want to drive and pick it up yourself.
I never think about that, but you go to Smithville, McMinnville.
Nursery capital of the Southeast,
right?
Yeah. Great places to go. And the cherry laurel, that looks like it gets pretty big, too. The cherry laurel. The apps, when they mentioned that, it reminded me there are so many cool apps out there where you can point your camera at a plant and it'll tell you what you're looking at. Which
sure.
Really neat.
And the other thing that we should point out is the Extension has a publication from UT Hort called Studs and Duds. And so it's plant material that are either really beneficial for Tennessee that will grow here without much effort. And then the duds are the ones that you want to avoid because they are going to have a hard time here. They struggle with disease and the climate and so on.
And a lot of these, I'm sorry to interrupt there, but also it's been tried and tested, right? That's where you go to these trial gardens at all the different extension offices and Jackson and Cookeville and here in Middle Tennessee
and Knoxville,
Knoxville as well, and they're trying out different varieties, so they're taking all of the work out of it, so you can come and just see what's going to work best in your garden. It's a great resource.
The cherry laurel is, you know, it's native to Southern Europe in a temperate climate there where the soils apparently drain a lot better. They don't, our heavy soils, they tend not do real well. They can, and they're beautiful when they have no wildlife value. But if you're, again, I look at these plants as a stewardship thing.
Yeah.
Not only are native plants beautiful, but they provide benefits to wildlife that the non-natives don't.
Yeah.
The problem is, how do you know what's native and what's not? And I could talk, but you know, there are websites. You can just do a Google search. Where is it native to? There's a website called Bonap, B-O-N-A-P. And if you, it's Biota North American Plants. It was an effort. It was a good, like 15 years ago, every county in the U.S., what's native in the county?
Right.
And they have a database there. If you Bonap and put a plant and search around, there's better ways to do it. It gets kind of geeky with botanical names. But if you go B-O-N-A-P in a plant, and then hit a few links, you can find a native range, a map of the U.S., and it'll be green where they're native.
Huh.
Or if it's not there, it may not be native to the U.S.
Yeah.
You know? Yes.
Again, we're talking lawns and gardens, and somebody asks, what app can you use to point at plants and take a picture? And it looks like you can just take the picture with your phone and then throw that picture into your Google search, and it says it has about a 98% accuracy.
That's crazy.
And naming the plant. That's cool.
Yes.
Yeah, on an Android phone, there's a little square box.
Yeah.
And if you click on that, it'll bring your camera up, and that is your search mechanism, and it will identify the plant for you.
That's neat, though. 98% accuracy. That's cool.
That sounds good. I've found it to be a little less than 98%. That's just my...
Yes. Well, you're looking at esoteric plants.
I'm looking at the weird.
You're a whole different level, Rand. A whole different level.
And then there's another one called. Let's see here.
Picture this is
picture
what I.
Picture this. Yeah,
that, I use
that's
that
one of them.
Plant snap is another.
Yeah.
Oh, plant snap, and then there's plant net, and then there's leaf snap as well. So
right.
Lots
I've used
of options.
Several of those.
It's so cool though what you can do with technology. When you start looking at stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
That's neat. Again, our number 615-893-1450. We had another question here, and I thought I copied it and wrote it down again. Okay, it is, let's see. What are the most common mistakes that you see local gardeners make in their garden in spring and fall?
In spring and fall?
Here's one is planting, especially woody plants. Planting them, trees and shrubs, woody plants, too deep.
Or you know, too close.
It's a manly thing. Right, I'm going to dig a big hole and I'm going to plant it, put it way
that,
down
yeah.
there and give it a good start.
6 feet under. That's
yeah.
right.
That's
you want the, like if it's a tree or the flare, where the flare is, if you can see that, you don't want that just above, you know, where the roots start, you want that to be just barely below ground. And a lot of container plants, the container medium, the potting soil is very light. And so when you pull it out of the container, I brush all that off. Find out where the roots start.
Yeah.
You know, if you plant it where that medium may be, it's light, and but planting plants too deep is a common.
Of course, we got that
mistake.
Horrible clay soil in most areas.
Yeah, not amending your soil. I'd say would be another big mistake is that you got to, you know, look at your soil and add to, if you need to, raised beds are wonderful options for that. And then the sun also. I mean, you have to look and see where the sun is, where the shade is. That's a big mistake too. Are you getting 6 to 8 hours of sun for these plants that need that? You know, you're just going to frustrate yourself all day long if you're planting something in the shade that needs sun. So, you know, it's getting out there and just getting familiar with your
again,
yard, your garden.
There's some shade lovers, you know. And
yes,
so, like the north and east side of your house, if there's no tree roots in there especially, will stay more, you know, get part. And so there's plants that love that exposure.
Yeah.
The south and west side of your house get a lot of hot, hot afternoon sun. So,
And I would say, too, you know, if you're buying a potted plant of any kind, it is okay to try to pull that plant out of the pot and take a look at its roots before you buy it. So anything that is not white or it's got circular roots, you probably don't want to buy that plant. It's root bound and it's going to not probably thrive as best as it should. And the other thing I see, particularly with landscapers, I know I bought a new house. It was nicely landscaped with a lot of plant material, but they didn't gauge how close or how large these plants were going to be at their mature size. So you've got a crepe myrtle that somebody put 3 feet from the corner of your house. Well, you know, in 15 years, that tree is going to overtake the foundation of your house. So, you know, measuring or when you draw out your graph paper and your plan, making sure that you've got the mature growth of the plant on that diagram so that you don't have plants that are just too close together. Don't, and then you end up having to move them again.
Don't just trust the contractor who laid down a bunch of plants.
Oh, no, I've moved about everything in my yard that
makes
they put down.
Well, we are already out of time. Today with us, Beth Brinkley, Ram Powers, and Carol Wood, all master gardeners. And don't forget, tomorrow is the winter farmers market starting at 8 a.m. at Lane Agripark on John R. Rice Boulevard. And thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Yes, and can we just plug our Master Gardening class?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
That starts
in January, goes for 14 weeks. The applications are online now.
Sounds good. Again, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Scott.
We're 1 minute away from the 9 o'clock hour. Stay with us. We do have news coming your way next.